Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hey, good morning, Vachon. It's the Brown Briefly's again, coming to you on October 12th of the year 2021. We are assembled. We're ready to go. As I love to hear Gail talk it, we're gonna talk about matters of importance and matters of whimsy. So I look forward to the next 45 minutes we're sharing with you. Hey, let's check in and see what's our main feature of what we remember from the past week that we want to bring to our listeners' attention. I'll start with a hailstorm. My yard for almost 24 hours with a half inch to even maybe three quarter inch size hailstones. So I was fortunate to not be driving during that time. But wow, what a show of weather force!
It was.
Anybody else have observations?
Well, climate change is real.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean global warming necessarily. Different places react differently to global climate change, and we're one of them.
Well, I have to admit, this is the first hail that I've encountered with my new metal roof.
How was that?
It was pretty dramatic, to say the least.
Did you have a little Gene Krupa on the roof?
Yeah,
a little good drumming?
A little rat-a-tat-tat, for sure.
Love it.
Sorry, Gil.
I didn't mean to interrupt you either, Kevin. I was just going to say, I've been waiting for the Olympic Mountains to get their first coat of snow. It hasn't really happened in a time frame that I've seen them, because they have it's rain, hail, snow event here, or not so much snow down this low, but then up high it'll come down as snow. And those mountains, I swear, they grow 10,000 feet overnight. So I'm looking forward to that. It happens usually in these first few weeks of October, so mm-hmm. I'm on the lookout.
You know what they call that in Anchorage? They call that termination dust.
Ooh. And what does that refer to?
Well, termination of the summer. Oh. And you see the snow in the mountains, it's right. Termination dust.
It's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. Well, they have a little different termination than we do, don't they?
Indeed.
Serious termination.
Yeah. Yes, you know, Truman, I was wondering in that hail storm and, of course, the lightning and the thunder that we had. What would you be thinking if you were airborne during that?
I'd be looking for a place to go. you see, I have to tell you, though, with the modern equipment now, we've always had radar, weather radar in the airplanes, so that you can see water droplets is what you see. You don't see lightning, but you see water droplets, and pretty clearly. And with the new equipment now, you see that superimposed on your map. So you have a moving map with the course that you're flying, and you can see where the thunderstorms are around that course, and you can actually deviate around them by changing your course. And anyway, it's modern navigational equipment is amazing, fabulous, in fact.
There you go. So this don't let a hailstorm deter you from flying to your favorite destination.
Exactly. Well, if it's really hailing, we ain't going nowhere. I mean, we don't fly into the hail. Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Truman, I wondered, when you're flying, can you get above thunderstorms, or is the air above a thunderstorm as rough as below it?
No. Well, it depends on where you are. If you're down in the southern part of the U.S. or in the Midwest, those thunderstorms can go up to 45,000. I mean, they go way up there. And airliners, wow. The max cruise altitude for an airliner is 41,000. Mm. So I have flown over them, and you'll get a little updraft, but it's not that bad. I've also flown through the middle of them back before we had all the fancy stuff. And I've seen some I have seen some St. Elmo's fire. You know what that is, St. Elmo's fire? That's the static electricity that builds up on the airplane. If you go through dry snow or anything like that, you'll get a tremendous buildup, and it's pretty impressive. And I've seen some arcs of that stuff that would just curl your toes. You would not believe what it looks like. Pretty exciting.
Are you saying, Truman, that that means that St. Elmo's fire is actually encapsulating your airplane?
Oh yeah, you get it all around the windshield, and you'll see it around the engine sometimes.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it's pretty entertaining. And sometimes, go ahead, Bruce.
No, that used to happen with the old three-masted sailing ships.
Oh yeah.
The masts were high enough into those kind of storms that the ship would just get encapsulated in St. Elmo's fire.
Yeah.
A very spooky kind of thing when you read the accounts.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's actually kind of pretty. I mean, some of it can be, you know, kind of a blue green glow that you'll get, and then sometimes you'll have arcs. It looks like miniature lightning that goes across the windscreen. You know, that these things are flashing like lightning. It's pretty entertaining.
And that doesn't throw off your instruments?
No, not at all, not at all. We have what's called static wicks that are out on the airplane that discharge the static buildup as well. So,
And see, these are the challenges that aerospace design engineers get to grapple with.
Exactly. Well, I will say that I took a lightning strike one time on the nose, right on the nose of the airplane, going into LA one night, and that was pretty impressive. it lit up the interior of the airplane. The flight attendants are dinging that call button. What the heck is going on? And we said, we just took a lightning strike.
Could you see your bones?
Yeah, just about.
That's what I hear people saying.
Yeah, no, it was pretty. It was pretty bright and pretty loud, I can tell you.
Wow. Well, Kevin, you were an engineer for Boeing for many years. What did those engineers design to help get us through those things?
Oh, I was actually in the space division, so we were dealing with satellites and other types of issues. But
above weather,
you know, the above weather challenges, yeah. But you know, to the point, you know, understanding physics, understanding how those electric charges propagate across different materials. For example, if you're in a car and you encounter a downed power line that hits your car, that electronic charge is going to be on the outside of the vehicle, and you're on rubber tires in a car, so you're actually insulated from the ground, and you're not in contact with the energy of the electric circuit. Now, when you step out of the car in that situation, you create a pathway to ground, and all of a sudden, you become the conduit for that energy, and that can be fatal. So there's all kinds of understanding of physics, and then how do you design systems where humans can interact with them in a way that they accomplish their objective and keep people safe? So that's just a nutshell view, just one example.
I'm glad that we brought this topic up, because our show this morning, our morning scramble show, was all about space, because tomorrow, Captain James Tiberius Kirk, a.k.a. William Shatner, is going to be blasting into space on the Blue Origin rocket. That's tomorrow morning at 9:45, by the way. It'll be streaming live. So,
pending weather conditions, right? Exactly. Because wasn't it, it was halted today or yesterday?
Yeah. High winds. Yeah. It was supposed to go this morning, and they put it off a day because of the high winds. And out in West Texas, believe me, it blows. So.
Is he going to wear his like Starship Enterprise insignia on his shoulder?
You know, actually, have you seen the pictures of him though? They're all.
Saw one.
Oh yeah, they're all in their flight suits, and on his it says William Shatner, and then underneath it says AKA James T. Kirk.
All right,
which is pretty cool, I think.
All right. Well, I'm glad to see that there's plenty of levity to go around, and engineering discipline, as well as, you know, the travels and travails of flying in inclement weather, and including launching rockets in inclement weather. But hey, there's more to the show than just that. So why don't we dive in? And I'll quote from Rachel Maddow, who I admit I do occasionally watch. Rachel, as you might imagine, she basically a couple shows ago said Roe versus Wade is effectively dead in this country. For those who are trying to avoid the news, unfortunately, we're going to bring it to you here. The Texas legislature passed a new law effectively banning abortions. The Federal Department of Justice initiated a lawsuit to stop the new Texas law. But last week, a federal Judge Pittman sided with the Department of Justice, saying basically halting the Texas abortion law. So putting a stop to the law in Texas that would effectively ban abortions. Days later, a federal appeals court overturned Pittman's ruling. So we have a ping pong game going on over this Texas law, and which has bearing on hundreds of thousands of women in Texas and millions of women across the United States eventually regarding what is currently a legal right in the country under Roe versus Wade. So first of all, I do want to acknowledge this is, of course, a sensitive issue, and I think we should be respectful of our opinions and views of it. But let me start first asking Gail and Lynn, you've cited this topic in previous shows. What are your reactions from this back and forth struggle over a woman's right to choose what happens with their own bodies? Maybe Lynn?
Go ahead, Lynn there.
Excuse me, my headpiece is falling off at the very mention of this topic.
Many women are having the same experience.
You know, that steam coming from your ears?
It did. It just blew out my earpiece. No, you know, I spend a lot of time in this. I've spent years. I worked for Planned Parenthood. I worked for family planning clinics. I worked for a health education department in Georgia. So I've been thinking about this for lots of years. And, you know, it's a ping pong that keeps on playing. I don't quite understand what the very underneath, you know, manipulations are really all about. When we had the march against these new abortion situations and restrictions here in Washington and in Vashon, there were probably 250 people that showed up to protest this new round of these arguments. And Amelia Bono, who is with a group called shoutyourabortion.org, I think, might be .com, you know, was talking about how this has been a very silent, quiet debate. You know, you're hearing one side of a debate an awful lot about people who don't believe in abortion and don't want anybody else to have abortion. So, you know, there's to me an obvious church versus state situation going on here. But Amelia Bono got up and said, you know what this is really about? It's not about totally eliminating abortion, because people who have money can always go buy one in another state if they need it. And it's really about keeping people poor and keeping control over women. And I've puzzled about that for a long time. I puzzle about it in Afghanistan, and I puzzle about it in, you know, a lot of the countries that really discriminate against women. And I'm not quite sure why we're so scary. And I have always wanted to throw that question right back to the men and say, so what is it about needing to control women's bodies that's happening here when we can't pass gun laws that keep, you know, killing thousands and thousands and thousands of people, children as well as adults? So I'll really toss that one right back to you, Kevin, and ask the guys on the show, what is so scary about women and their wish to keep control of their own bodies?
I mean, the people that I know that, you know, are anti-abortion, they don't say anything about that. They're talking about just human life, quote, which I think is ridiculous, but that's what they're talking about. And the woman is not even considered, mm-hmm. which says a lot in my mind. Mm-hmm. But that's but it's true.
Thank you for that. True.
Yes.
Yeah, the women are not even considered. It's, you know, that human life.
It's the thing. Christian idea of when human life begins.
And I'm not even sure it's truly Christian. It's what they believe. I mean, what they think is the, you know.
Yeah.
Right, and is not a proponent of trying to control women and basically subjugate them. I don't have an answer to your question, Lynn, but Gail, maybe you have some additional thoughts.
Well, I think it's very interesting that this is such a difficult issue, and I really appreciate the sensitivity, you know, that you've opened this topic with, Kevin. Thank you for that, because it's not just a political issue for women. It is such a personal issue. I don't think that there's an equivalent anywhere for men where the state, where the government would come in and dictate your life in your body and control it in that kind of way through legal means. And I think that so for women, it's shocking to a lot of us that anybody would even attempt that, let alone then, you know, garner the kind of support that these laws seem to be gathering right at the moment.
What I find fascinating is that the very same people who are the anti-abortion folks are the folks who are raising the most hell about the vaccination.
Yeah.
They are the same folks, and their argument is counterintuitive. I mean, it's they're saying the very opposite thing that they're saying, yes, we support that and we support this.
Yeah, they're saying we can't invade their bodies with the shot, and yet they want to control years. What a woman does with their body.
It's mind-boggling to me. I don't get it.
Well, it's not really very rational.
I will say, Lynn, to the point you're making, which I think is really a valid one, is that, you know, there is this hierarchy, right, in human affairs. And I think it's in the animal world, it's the pecking order, right?
Exactly.
Which is a very real thing, right?
Exactly.
I mean, we have a lot of bird feeders outside our window, and it invites not only birds, but also squirrels and chipmunks and gray squirrels and Douglas squirrels. And we watch that pecking order play out of who's willing to be aggressive to protect that food source and who's willing to be passive and just wait until later. It's just, I mean, it is a phenomenon which I think is prevalent, right, across any situation in which there's a resource that others are going to need to compete for or share in some fashion. Maybe it's a better way to say it. But I certainly can't profess to understand the motives of folks, other than to say that everybody wants to be a little bit higher on the rung of the ladder is a natural human condition, and some folks I think are threatened by a loss of their power and authority, and it's unfortunate that we have that system, and hopefully human intellect and civilization, right, can propel us to transcend that. But as you point out, in Afghanistan, for example, it's certainly not happening at any rapid rate in some other countries. So hopefully in America, we have a chance to move forward, or some other enlightened country, what we would consider enlightened countries. But anyway, maybe back, Lynn, to your thoughts on that.
Go ahead, Gail.
Lynn, if you have a direct thought in response, go ahead. My question is actually a historical one for Bruce.
Well, I do have a sort of a direct thought, which was that I think, you know, it's fine for me to have people who don't choose to believe in the woman's right to abortion. They can do what they choose. I think I said this last week. And yet, you know, they want to police everyone else. And with this new law, which enables the random observer to sue anybody for violating this new law, for even contemplating and kind of planning the idea of a woman who wants to pursue ending a pregnancy, you know, they're setting up a bounty hunter type situation. They're setting up a no cap kind of amount that can be sued. It has tilted into the realm of the truly bizarre to me. And I can't even understand how an appeals judge would see there be any constitutionality to some of the aspects of what they've done with this law. It's to me flagrantly in violation of not only the woman's protected right under Roe versus Wade to get a medical procedure they deem necessary. You know, it puts a random observer to whom no harm is coming, you know, in the position of bringing suit, whereas in tort law, as I understand it, you must show harm to the person who's suing for damages, and that this person, you know, could raise tens of thousands of dollars and have started doing that. You know, in radio descriptions that I've heard of this law, is just social order breaking down completely to me. And it's this sort of state versus the federal argument, you know, that we're having on many grounds. And I think it's a puzzle, but I think the winning statistic is that I think there's almost 80%, I think it's like 79% of people in the country who are polled about, do you believe women should have the constitutional right to choose their reproductive life themselves or not, therefore a woman's right to choose. So I think we have to try to understand what is going on with this state versus federal insanity, this completely crazy, irrational volley that has been, you know, tipped into this particular battle. And for me, it just feels like distraction about all of the other political things that are happening where, I don't know, people are losing their minds. I feel like the social order is breaking down and people are losing their minds. That's personally the way I feel about it. I don't think they're right.
Before we jump over to Gail's point, Lynn, when I hear you talking, it reminds me of a bumper sticker I saw on Vashon. The words that were emblazoned on a rainbow background bumper sticker: did I vote on your marriage?
Exactly.
And it's the kind of thing of, you know, whose business is it of yours, right? But at any rate, Gail, please.
Yeah. I'm curious about it from a historical level. Many things. This is such a deep issue for me, as it is for many women, and I could talk about it on a personal as well as level as well as a political level. But I'm curious about a couple things. One, is this distracting us from bigger issues, such as the rights of children to live in a world that's healthy and safe and environmentally stable? You know, we seem to be, you know, turn. It seems to be
exactly what I mean, Gail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's taking a lot of attention from really, for example, the climate crisis, which is a threat to every child born and unborn, you know, generations to come. And so why are we going off on this little, what is really kind of a
rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, I believe is how that's described.
And so, you know, that's one of the things that concerns me. And I do understand from some reading that I've done that was during the Nixon administration or just prior to that, during the campaign for presidency, that they were wanting to sort of fire up the right, religious right. And this is some of where that abortion, this question of abortion started to rise as a national question that was intentionally, fire intentionally lit.
That's exactly what I think, Gail.
Can we hear your historical knowledge here on any of these questions?
Yeah, I mean, you got to contextualize it. I mean, remember, I mean, you need to look back at where the origins of this idea of anti-abortion comes from. And it comes from societies millennia ago where children were precious, and ending at pregnancy, and children died early. I mean, you know, I mean, in that context, you know, preserving a pregnancy was important. Now that becomes inculcated within religious beliefs and in all cultures around the world. I mean, it's not just Christian culture that has provisions opposing abortion. You know, and so you look at that and how that develops. But it's not until the 19th century, the early 1800s, that you see the first legislation, anti-abortion legislation, in British common law societies. And again, around the world, you know, all the British settler societies in the early 19th century begin to pass anti-abortion laws. And so when you put it in that context, you know, there's always been an anti-abortion sentiment in British common law and British settler societies and in many societies around the world. And then how it becomes a proxy battle, and really, I mean, the battle is not over abortion. I mean, let's not fool ourselves.
That's right.
It's a proxy battle, just like Vietnam was a proxy war, you know, and Korea was a proxy war, and Afghanistan was a proxy war. These are not, abortion is not the real issue here. You need to step behind that and see what's working in our society and what's separating us, and why an issue like abortion becomes such a touch point over these cultural wars that are not really about abortion. So that's sort of my perspective on it.
I would just make the observation that from a long historical standpoint, where patriarchy has been the norm,
mm-hmm. Sure.
Women not only didn't belong to themselves, they belonged to their husbands, and their unborn children belonged to their husbands. Sure. And hence, I think it is in part this long arm idea that that's, you know, my child, you don't have control of your body. Mm-hmm. You don't get to choose whether you're, you know, whether you're going to have this child or not. You know, it's in many ways, the prerogative of the male to tell the woman that she can, and that she will have this child, wanted or unwanted. All of this is just, it's so deeply disturbing, but at the level of incest and rape, all the more so. It's becomes unbelievable to me. I mean, I feel a lot like Lynn does, like if you lost your mind. What do you expect this woman to do with a child that, you know, looks like her assailant every day? And having a child is not a, you know, it's not an event. It's a lifetime. It is the rest of your life. It is a life sentence and many, gosh, wonderful people raise these children and with love and compassion and forgiveness for what happened. But it is unbelievable to hoist and hold a woman to in that position.
Yeah. Lynn, I think Lynn, you've had it.
Yeah, I was going to say that's what I believe Amelia Bono was trying to say, that this is really about controlling women. If it were really about unwanted pregnancies, where is the male punishment for being involved in an unwanted pregnancy? There's not one. And so I think it's so deeply layered in an onion that you come down to, you know, some very strange truths under there for each person. Truman,
we're very lucky to have in the studio an early guest who's going to be on very shortly after us, and that's Susan McCabe. Susan has a few thoughts about this topic, as you can imagine.
As you can imagine, yeah.
Susan.
Of course, I've been listening to this in my car, and I love your discussions, Lynn. I was so thrilled with your question of what's so scary about women, which kind of, as Gail has said, goes back throughout the history of patriarchies. But in our current situation, I mean, there are so many layers to this onion. Bruce, you said this is not about abortion, it's about something else. To my mind, that's power and domination.
Yep.
But the people who are lobbying against a woman's right to choose are also the people who lobby against child care.
Yes.
So they want all these unwanted and children, welfare, as Gail says, to be born, but they don't want to have anything to do with them. In fact, they call their mothers sluts and welfare whores. So it is so misogynistic. It is so much about domination, power and domination. And Bruce, I'd like you to elaborate more on what is it you said, what it's really about. How would you define what it is really about?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, certainly,
you said
it's not about one thing. I mean, all of these things are nuanced, and certainly it's about the patriarchy, but it's also about states' rights versus federal rights. Mm-hmm. It's also about individual rights versus societal rights. Right. And so when you look at these things, you can't look at them through one lens. Yeah, you know, I think to understand what's going on, you need to look through all those lenses to understand why it's sort of like focusing the rays of a sun into burning an ant, if you will. It collects all these things, and abortion becomes that poor ant that's at the focus point of all these rays of light that are coming together. But it's not about abortion. It's about all those other rays of light that are focusing on it, in my estimation.
So I do have a question, though, too. We keep talking about patriarchal society. What about the societies that are matriarchal, which we do have in the world? How do they handle? I mean, do they handle abortion? Or is that a thing with them? I don't know.
I don't know enough about how many matriarchal societies there are left.
Well, that's true. And
to do research on, let me put it that way.
I bet Gail knows.
Well, there are a handful, and yeah, there aren't many, and I don't know the details of any laws, but I'd bet some money on it. I'd bet some money on it that women aren't told in those societies what to and not to do with their bodies in this regard. And I think that, you know, getting back to this question you asked, Lynn, what are men so afraid of? I don't think men in this day and age currently, certainly anyone in the studio here, or even probably among our listeners, can really acknowledge that they're afraid of men, afraid of women, or even are consciously afraid of women. But I think that there is deep in the psyche an understanding that women are very powerful. You know, we're powerful, though, in a different way than men. And in particular, our power is our ability to bring life into this world. And when you have that power, it kind of trumps everything else in many ways. And if you exercise that power, men don't feel, again, not personally to anyone here, I'm not saying that, or even to any of our listeners, but I think historically, deep in the psyche, the lizard brain is like, wow, that's dangerous. These women actually maybe don't need us as much as we'd like to think. Maybe they don't. Maybe they would take control. Maybe we wouldn't have the power that we now, you know, worldwide, I mean, it still is a society where men dominate almost everywhere in almost every realm. And I think that there is that wanting, kind of back to what you said, Kevin, there is a pecking order, and the men right at the moment in this time in history are on the top of that pecking order, and they'd like to keep it there. And one way you do that is you disempower women from things like reproductive rights and control and power over their own bodies.
Beautiful.
Well said. I want to drop back to a couple of things that I think can a little bit tie up some of what everybody has said, which is out of deep history and out of sort of psychology. From deep history, Gail, I think you're exactly right that women giving birth are very powerful, and it involves men's goodwill and protection to be pregnant, especially in eras without birth control, much less abortion. And I think there's a very fine line between protection and control. And I think that that line can be stepped over righteously sometimes in the case of emergencies and kind of sudden thinking that, you know, somebody has to act quickly or something. And yet in our primitive brains, you know, we vacillate at that line between protection and control. And the other thing I want to just tie together is I think psychologically, every time there is such instability in the world or in our lives, we look for anything we can control. And that's why incidences of domestic violence go up in times like this. This is why, you know, kind of mental health incidences go up. People are acting out, trying to find something they can control and get kind of a handle of. And it's not conscious. This is reptilian kind of animal behavior. And I would just sort of end my part of this by saying, you know, please don't be distracted by this legal maneuver designed to, Gail, I think what you said earlier is right on, designed to pull us off of the issues of climate change, of gun control, of all the other things we're flailing around about now, about where the money is going to come from to rebuild our country. I mean, this is very unstable times. And it's not really surprising to me that it's that somebody's using this time to try to consolidate what they might see as gains over this one tiny little area of control over women, to which we say, no, thank you.
Mm-hmm. I will say, and thank you, Lynn, for the sort of summary there. I will add a couple of other points that our listeners may want to consider. Heather McGee, in her book, The Sum of Us, spends time talking about the shift in American demographics, and particularly the shift away from white, majority white demographic to a majority of mixed race and people of color demographic. And the fear that can arise there, knowing the historic atrocities that have been propagated against people of color in this country, and what will happen when the tables turn, kind of thing. So Heather addresses that, and I think it's a very valid thing to contemplate, you know, as people who are afraid of losing their power and control are now maybe subject to the power and control of others. And this fear, which she says is valid, but not really rational, is something to contemplate. The other thing that I'll mention, and I know, Truman, you've got a comment, but the other thing I'll mention is that, you know, I would personally like to think that, you know, we have sort of moved beyond this notion of women as being controlled or subjugated by their relations, predominantly men. But I'd just like to share two examples. One, I was canvassing for a candidate over in the 26th across Cobles Passage, and I knock on the door, and the couple arrives to see who's there, right? And we talk a while, and the guy is like not really too keen on what I have to say about voting for this candidate. But as he turns around and walks down the hallway, she silently mouths to me, "I'm going to vote for that person." Right? Okay. So clearly, you know, she wasn't willing to share that with her husband. The other one, which is just more sort of some things I'll never forget, I was calling and talking to voters in Colorado. And I was calling into Colorado Springs. And as many of us know, and certainly Truman knows, is an area that is a high concentration of military folks. And the woman that I talked to, when I asked her, trying to say you should be voting for this woman, she said, "I'm going to be pretty much voting for the person my husband tells me I should vote for." And I was shocked to hear that. And all I could think to say was, "Well, ma'am, I sure hope your husband has your best interests in mind when he makes a recommendation." And that's, I hope, good. That inspired her to realize that she had agency. It's her choice. It's her vote. It's her values. And she needs to stand up for that. But I certainly couldn't tell her that in the situation. I couldn't imagine what it was, but I imagine it was certainly not what I have in my household, and certainly not what I prefer to see in others. But anyway, Truman, please.
One of the things that you were talking about, the change from all white to, you know, the conglomeration that we have in this country. One of my army buddies in the Deep South was talking about Biden, and he said he's given this country away. And I said, to whom is he giving it? And he said, you know, I thought you were smarter than that. That was his response. And I thought, you know, that's really interesting. I had to think about that a while. But I thought, finally, I think I figured out that he's giving the you know, white middle class or whatever, it's giving that power away is what he's concerned about. I found that interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, I did have to ponder that quite a while.
And sometimes you don't know. I mean, it's sort of like the challenge that Bruce raised for our consideration is it's maybe not about abortion. It's about all the other factors that sort of bring abortion to the head of the list of things being discussed and a light being shown.
And meanwhile, women are having to drive miles and miles and miles and miles and miles to get out of Texas to be able to do what they need to do.
Well, there is one benefit there. You're getting the hell out of Texas. Sorry, I'm from Texas. I can say that. It's all right.
As a former Texan.
That's right. As a former Texan, I can say that.
Yeah, right. And again, I mean, contextualize this. If you put this in the context of the civil rights battle, Plessy versus Ferguson to Brown versus the Board of Education, you know, a 70-year battle in the courts, this will very quickly come to the Supreme Court. And Roe versus Wade, dispute Rachel Maddow, it's not dead because the Supreme Court has not ruled on it.
That's right.
What's going to be interesting is that this particular case, as it works its way to the Supreme Court, will decide whether or not Roe versus Wade is the rule of the land or whether it's overthrown by a new court decision. If it is overthrown by a new court decision, then it's imperative for all of us to work for federal legislation, going back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg's sort of position.
That's right.
Roe versus Wade was not the way to do it. Federal legislation is the way to do it.
Right.
But are they
going to challenge?
Are they going to approach this as a states' rights issue versus, you know, Roe v. Wade? Or
well, it'll be interesting. Yeah. That's the center of this case as it
exactly.
moves to the Supreme
yeah.
Court. Is it states' rights versus federal rights? How does Roe versus Wade fit into that?
Exactly.
It's a complex legal issue. It's not going to be decided on one basis.
Right.
But it's imperative that we all fight for federal legislation so that we're not basing a woman's choice on a Supreme Court, secondary ruling, not the law of the land. And right now, Roe versus Wade is not the law of the land. It's a Supreme Court ruling. I mean, yeah. So.
Right. Gail.
I just want to end this on I'm just framing this. This is a women's rights issue, almost period.
Thank you.
You know.
And second.
Third.
and it may, this could usher in the overturning of Roe versus Wade could usher in finally like the Equal Rights Amendment or any number of the backlash from doing something like this may be seriously large. It may propel a woman finally into the White House into the it's center stage in the White House. We've got one in there now. So sometimes we don't know what positive things can come out of what things appear to be dire in the moment.
All right. Well, hey, I certainly welcome our Vashon audience for joining this Brown Briefly version of Flying Through Hailstones. We will bring you some other challenging perspective conversations at next week's show. So please look forward to joining us. I thank you for...